in the face of adversity, how likely are you to give up? How likely are you to give up, fold, or see it through? And that's one of the things that would come up. A lot of this is like intra. So like, what do you do to understand and manage your own emotions? And then inter, how do you connect and understand and deal with other people?
Welcome to The Business of Doing Business. I'm your host, Dwayne Kerrigan. With 35 years in business and close to 30 ventures across 12 industries, I've seen a lot. Amid the celebrity allure of entrepreneurship, many exceptional entrepreneurs remain shadowed. Here, I team up with these hidden talents to unveil their challenges and successes. Dive in with me to unearth entrepreneurial gems, learn from our experiences, and get educated. Welcome, everyone, this week to our second part of the episode with Victoria Terrio, where last week we spoke about how she left her job after 20 years and then became an expert in DISC profiling in order to be able to help companies build teams, which is really where her passion lies. And she's so good at it. So if you haven't heard the first part of this, of Victoria Terrio's episode last week, you need to end this one, go back to the first one, listen to that, and then come back this week and tune back in as we talk more about behavioral profiles, working with people, working with teams, helping them grow and get the most out of each other, and work as efficiently as possible to accomplish, you know, their own personal goals and the team goals and the company goals. So guys, we're so happy to have you here. Thank you very much. Here's Victoria Terrio. Is there common misrepresentations inside the various four quadrants? Which what I mean by is some people be like, oh yeah, no, I'm a D, but they're actually something else. And like, is there any typical where people go, oh no, I'm for sure an I, but they're actually, you know, are those come up commonly or not?
I don't know in that circumstance, but what I do find in terms of this, and this is very gendered, this part, I find that men in business seem to think they need to have a D. And if I am coaching them or talking to them, they almost seem like it's a failure on their part if they don't have a D. So that's a really big hurdle to overcome, because you don't have to have a high D to be successful. The way you're going to get success is going to look different than how a high D does. But that is one of the big hurdles I will overcome. I don't want to say this across the board, but I do find that this is an interesting example because, you know, you asked. And the reason I'm using D is the flip of that is when I'm talking to a woman with a high D, she's often apologetic for it. I really saw that. That's something that really came through. So like, oh, I sound harsh. That's interesting because I find that the men, they seem kind of like proud of it or like, yeah, this is an essential thing. And I'm and the woman is sometimes like, oh, I don't know. I mean, that's a whole other conversation, right? About why is it, what is the programming we're receiving for women to feel almost apologetic versus men to feel proud? That is often what I would say, Dwayne. And so sometimes I think men try to act a little bit more like the high D. They maybe try to put that on because they think that's what's needed. And part of the value in having your own profile done and understanding it is I can show you. So let's say you're that guy and you think, oh, I need to have a higher D. And I can show you, hey, here's what having a low D actually is good at. So for instance, like when we're talking about this, we're doing a very high level overview. So I'm only talking to you about the high factors, but the low factors mean something too. Again, I think I said it already, but low doesn't mean bad. Okay.
Yep.
We can't have all high factors. It's not possible. So low D, what does a low D bring to the table? Well, low Ds are very accommodating. They take a much more of a curious, like, oh, let me see what you think approach. And so it's the catching more flies with honey than vinegar is what I would say. So it doesn't mean they can't get it. They're just going to take a different approach. And guess what? Some clients or some team members would much more appreciate that approach. You need to kind of know that about yourself and know, hey, this is my strength. And maybe you've got the high I. And so you've got this double edge of sort of charm and accommodation. And that's going to work wonders, especially, you know, in sales or something that you need to get somebody on board with. So it's just a matter of understanding it. Again, this plays into something we talked about earlier. Most companies are just doing the tip of the iceberg with DISC. Oh, you have this profile. This means you'll be good at sales. Oh, you have this profile. That means you'll be good at administration. And they leave it there. One of the biggest things is they don't actually allow the person who had the DISC done understand it. They get like a brief report, but they don't follow it up and let that person learn the strengths. Hey, this is what you're really good at. And the reason we do this is not to, quote, judge you or test you. But when it's done ideally, it's to your benefit because your manager now knows what's motivating you. Your manager is going to try to connect with you on your level. They're going to speak to you in a way that inspires you. And so that's a win-win for everyone. So when you take that step further down the road in terms of coaching the new hire, facilitating with the team at large, that's really the next level of DISC. And that's where the real understanding and connection come in.
Yeah, clearly.
Super powerful.
So where this comes into me is just sort of another layer. When we talked about D, or say maybe somebody apologizing for having a D or not having a high enough D, where you can really get a deeper understanding of that is in the EQ coaching. So EQ is basically the little acronym for emotional intelligence. And so where DISC is, like, you know, with DISC, in order to do a DISC, it's, you know, it's quick, like, you know, you get a link, it's 24 questions, it takes people maybe 10 to 15 minutes. EQ, you would do that questionnaire assessment and it's like 270 questions. So much deeper dive. And what that looks at is, I think the way I would like to frame it up to people is DISC is fantastic because it kind of does everything. And it's a really, really good sketch. And a lot of times that's what we need. Like, we're coming into it, we're understanding things. So it's going to give you a very accurate sketch. If you want to take a really deeper dive, so let's say it's a person in leadership or even somebody at a crossroads in their career or somebody maybe you're struggling to motivate, if you want to have the portrait, the colored in full 3D version portrait, then you do the EQ coaching. And that looks at all kinds of things, right? So it looks at things like empathy. So this is what we talked about. So a high D who has a lot of empathy or a high D who has a lot of self-awareness is not going to appear the way that quintessential high D that we talk about being like direct. And some people might think, oh, they're so aggressive. A high D with a lot of empathy and self-awareness doesn't come across that way. And so you uncover those things. You uncover things like motivation, impulse control. That's a really big one. Social awareness, optimism, self-esteem, so many different things that one measures. And so that is a really deep dive. And that's where some really good work comes in. Where I actually find myself using this more so, and I don't know, Duane, if your company or companies do this, a lot of people use the 360. What that is getting feedback from, you know, a lot of other people's employees. And sometimes this happens if somebody's going to get a promotion or if perhaps there's feedback that things aren't going great or, you know, I prefer this over a 360 personally, the EQ thing, because I feel like with a 360, right away, people feel judged. It's like, oh my God, all these people are talking about me and this is what they're saying. And so I think the potential for growth is limited. If you're doing it really to help the person and help them grow, I think the hurt feelings get in the way. What's great about this is it's taking a deep dive. You're having the understanding and you're having the coaching tools. You're having things that are able to tell the person, hey, now you know, maybe you're not naturally optimistic. And here's some things as to maybe why that is. And here's some things you can work on. Or empathy, right? I said this to you too. Some of us have it in abundance naturally, and some of us don't, but it can be worked on. It can be built upon. And so now you've given the person, instead of just saying, oh, you're not doing this, you're not doing this, and this person feels this way, you're able to give them the tools and the ability to work on it. And then the piece comes in afterwards, once they've had that training, have those behaviors been observed. So have some of your colleagues observe that, oh yeah, I'm seeing a more empathetic approach, or I'm seeing a little bit more self-awareness or whatever. And so that's something that comes into play.
I'd never heard of the EQ test up until, I think I had somebody on the podcast, I can't remember who it was, but they had mentioned EQ. Mm-hmm. And then this is the first time I've ever had a conversation about it. So I'm actually fascinated with it because mm-hmm. I really do think this would be almost essential from what I was kind of gleaning from what you're talking about is like, that's gotta be essential for especially an executive team or anybody in a leadership position that's coaching others and training and working with teams very closely or managing teams very closely, this EQ piece is critical. I'm going to ask this question because it popped into my head. And the reason why it popped into my head was because I have this conversation so often. And when I say so often, I mean like virtually all the time with business people. In the EQ, like, does it kind of describe or help understand whether the level of the tenacity of the person or the perseverance or because, you know, it seems nowadays, and I hate putting a broad stroke on stuff that is not where I like to come from, but the conversation comes up so often, I would be remiss not to to kind of ask this question and bring the topic up, but there's seems to be this lower level of resilience in people where they're just, you know, whether it's there's, you know, too many opportunities out there, too many jobs, they can just go, you know what, I'll just go off to the next one. And you see so much turnover or people who just go, no, you know what, you can't talk to me like that. Or you can't, like, they give up and they walk away, or it's not worth it to them, or it's whatever their story is. Does EQ kind of dig into this, and how does it dig into it? And if somebody used this test, all my top managers are going to get this test, I can tell you, within 2 weeks of this podcast. So guaranteed. Because I think it's good, helpful information for their own personal growth.
Yeah.
And it's my responsibility as the leader of the organization to help people grow. And I need to have the tools and the information to help facilitate that. That's my job.
With the question you're asking about that, so there's a whole bunch of factors, like 15 or something. And so the one I think that you're honing in on is self-motivation. What that looks at is, in the face of adversity, how likely are you to give up? How likely are you to give up, fold, or see it through? And that's one of the things that would come up. A lot of this is like intra. So like, what do you do to understand and manage your own emotions? And then inter, how do you connect and understand and deal with other people? It's looking at those things, but definitely the piece that you mentioned, I think, would come into the whole, you know, the self-motivation. And then sometimes there's reasons for it, right? One of the things that's looking at is like self-esteem. That could be one of them. So this person could be a really hard worker, but then when you come and you have a look at it, you can see that maybe they have some negative self-talk, or maybe some beliefs that they've brought with them that they're not good enough, or they can't do the job perfectly. And again, got the potential for some really big breakthrough moments to kind of look at it and say, ooh, what's been holding you back? Or is this something that is an intrinsic belief? Is this something we can work on? And again, there's strategies. It's not just you're being told this and then see you later. It's like, here's what we can do to build upon that. So yeah, that would tease that out.
How does the test results, like, how do they show up? I've never seen it. So I'm having a little bit of a time wrapping it in my head to get an understanding of like, what if somebody gets it, they're listening to this podcast and they're like, hey, I should do this too. How's it going to show up for them? And what might it tell them about somebody specifically?
It's interesting in that the difference with this is this one is called what we call a normative assessment versus DISC, which is an ipsative. So DISC is a psychometric scale. It's measuring, you know, you're picking either or, this one, that one, this one, that one. What a normative one is it is basically placing your results against a general population. So for instance, for us, we would compare the person's results to a North American population to make it relevant. But my system is worldwide. So if you were in the UK, you could compare your answers to a UK. And so what EQ is looking for, and this is really going to throw you, especially you as a high D, Dwayne. On an EQ, you actually don't want to have really high scores. Okay. So everyone take that in. That might be surprising. So high scores, very high scores, and very low scores are not optimal. You kind of want to have mid-range scores. So why is that? What EQ is about being able to read people, have people be able to connect with you. So if you are out of that mid zone, right? If you are really up high and really down low, how easy is it going to be for you to understand others, and how easy is it going to be for them to relate to you? I can tell you some of the challenges I've had is, you know, in coaching people that have really high EQ scores. Now, keep in mind too, Dwayne, it's self-directed. Okay. This is where the piece comes in, where you can't just run it without having someone interpret it. If somebody could score themselves really high on everything, but then it's up to the facilitator like me to really understand, are they overly optimistic? Or I have a colleague that likes to use the word delusional. But that will come out very easily. That will come out because other things won't connect. Other things won't come back to it. People who are, for instance, really optimistic, and they think everything's going to work out. They think everything's great. And I had this woman, and we had such a barrier for a while where one of the issues, this was one of those cases where it was kind of done in lieu of a 360. And what it was some of her colleagues found her to be, well, annoying, but demotivating. And she was like, I don't understand this. I'm the most positive person there is. I come in every morning. I'm cheerful. I tell a funny story. I'm singing a song. And, you know, I think one of the other person's feedback was, I need to have at least two cups of coffee before I can handle her because she's so much. And I said to her, but that's great. That's how you operate. And like, that's a blessing that you're able to do that. But do you have the ability to read the room? How is that working for you? Are you getting right. the responses you want? And then there's a pause like, oh, and then, but I don't understand why somebody wouldn't, who wouldn't want somebody positive? I said, well, here we are. This person maybe needs a cup of coffee before they're ready for that. You need to understand that. You need to understand that also people think you're naive. So if you tell somebody something like, oh, it's fine, it's great, it's all going to work out. This is what we get a lot with people who are overly optimistic. And then their colleague or, you know, whoever it is, then basically feels like, yeah, you're not listening. It's not actually feeling okay. It may not work out actually. And so if that's how you're motivating someone, you're missing the mark. And they now are putting this judgment on you and saying, well, you're naive, so you're not relatable. So there's an example of why having a really high, say, optimism is not always great. You want to have it healthy high, but you don't want to have it super high.
Right. Well, and I think kind of goes along with your greatest strengths are always your greatest weaknesses, right? It's so,
you know,
so,
how often I say that, Dwayne?
Oh, do you?
I say that like once a week. 100%. It is. And for me, I can tell you mine is empathy. So I have very high empathy. This is something I had to, sounds crazy, work on bringing down a bit at the beginning of my career. So I, you know, I got certified. I had already been certified in DISC and team facilitation. And then I was already starting my business. And then I went and I did this one too. And it was very interesting because in the certification process, they get you to do it. And then they have somebody who coaches you. And they were kind of like, oh, be mindful of this. Like, you've got really high empathy. And I was like, oh, well, that should be great, right? Because I'm working with people. And they're like, yep, just, you probably need to put up some boundaries around that. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I, of course, didn't completely listen, had to learn the hard way. And so when you're someone that has an abundance of empathy, you can really easily find yourself taking on the emotions of the people that you're working with. You have a thing where you care so much, you want to fix it, you want to help, and you are actually then taking that on, and to a point then where you're going to burn yourself out. And so for me, the way that I will now get through to people who have really high empathy, because it's very hard to put yourself first if you're someone like this, is then I say, and this is what I had to tell myself, hey, Victoria, that's great that you want to do that. But now then you do that all day and then you come home. And then are you 100% yourself for your husband and your daughter? No, you're not. You're depleting yourself and you're depleting yourself. And then you're just going to become the shell of who you are. And how is that? How is that you being your best self for your family? Is that what you want to do? No. So it was definitely something I had to work with. And the EQ really helped me see that. So for me, that was very, very helpful in terms of my business and how I operate and setting up certain boundaries around it. And it allows me to still lead with empathy, but to not let it drain me.
Not even your family, it's you yourself.
Yeah. I mean,
there's nothing left in the tank for you.
Exactly.
To me, that's the analogy is when, you know, the oxygen mask comes down on the plane, do you put it on the person beside you first or do you put it on you first? You've got to make sure that you are able to survive, to be able to support and help and, you know, the people around you. So it's critical. Is there other, like, you know, in the EQ that you, things like that, that people think like, oh my gosh, that is going to be a total strength.
Yeah.
You know, I could see a lot of people who are high empathy.
Yeah.
Would be like, oh, there's no downside to this.
Right. And same with the optimism. Yeah. So for, honestly, for all of them, self-esteem, here's another one. I think everyone knows it's like self-esteem is pretty important to have. So I would never say, oh, you want to score low on self-esteem, but people have really high self-esteem sometimes can come across arrogant and again, untouchable almost, right? And so when they're giving advice or they're trying to motivate someone and they're just like, just believe in yourself, you can do it. The person's like, well, that's easier said than done. So again, it's your ability when you're so high on the scale one way or the other, your ability to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and to maybe perhaps see where they're coming from is limited. And you're also limiting that person's ability to connect with you. If you're someone, you come in, you have it all together. You know, you look polished, you're cheerful, everything's great in your life. That's all the person's hearing. Are you someone that they're going to want to confide in and maybe share a feeling that they think is less than ideal? Like, can they be vulnerable with you? Probably not.
That's an interesting point.
As a leader, you know, as someone who's like managing or motivating people, if you can't show up for them and be sort of a real version of yourself and say, hey, you know what? Oh, I screwed this up. Or, you know what? I was not feeling great today. I was feeling whatever. you are going to get so much more of a real connection with that person by saying that. And this is why, you know, understanding your EQ is really, really important.
I love this. This is awesome. I had a note and I had it circled here that because we were talking about dealing with the team, I think you phrased it as inter and intra. So the interactions with others, mm-hmm. was there anything that we missed? I feel like we skimmed the surface of that, but we didn't really. And that to me is the crux of, you know, team building. Like, I mean, obviously, like we've covered so much here around DISC and the four quadrants of behaviors, but being able to coach that in a team and being able to see and be aware of how the team is interacting, I just wondered if there's any key pieces that you might want to leave with the audience.
Yeah, I do think we kind of jumped in and out of that a bit. I think it was when I was talking about doing like a team audit and getting like a profile for like here, you know, so we know Dwayne's profile, we know Victoria's profile, but like, how about now with us and our six other team members, now we know that team's profile. What you will do is I told you it's a team audit report, so I can run that profile. And then what will come out at me is, hey, here are the three top strengths of this combined, you know, group of people. And here are maybe their challenges. And that's based on what these combined profiles are. And so how do we go forward with our business planning, with our structuring, knowing that these are our strengths? How do we try to hone in on those? And how do we try to work around and, you know, fix the ones that are our challenges and our blind spots? Knowing the role each person plays on the team is important. So when you do that team audit, there's not only the DISC factors, but there's role factors. So this is kind of cool. So what this will show you is who's the pioneer, who is the supporter, who's the nurturer, who is the networker, and who's the concluder. There's all these things. So what I love about that is, let's say back to the example where we talked about people who maybe are thinking, oh, I should have a high D and I don't. When they have a role factor, everyone has a role factor. So sometimes on teams, some people feel like I'm a cog in a wheel. I don't know that I'm like these people matter and I'm just here kind of doing my job. When we do this, everyone celebrates the role. So it's like, guess what? You're the anchor. You know, you're the anchor of the team. So we really need that. And chances are the anchor usually does not have a high D. The pioneer would have a high D, not a surprise. But the anchor is usually more of an SC. And so quite often SCs feel like, oh, I don't know that, you know, they're maybe not as visible. They're maybe not at the level. But guess what? I am the anchor. So that's really important. That's something that will come about in team building. Everyone feels connected. No one feels like a cog in a wheel. Everyone knows the part they play. And now collectively, we can celebrate each other. We can brainstorm together. And again, not only for the team building, like good feels of it all, but the strategy going forward, right? Let's say maybe we should realign this role because look what this person's strong at. And maybe we take that, you know, we can take that part away from someone and give them something they're strong at. And certainly recruiting and hiring going forward, knowing the set structure that the team already has, being able to hire tactically going forward to make, you know, to fill any gaps that we see is such an advantage.
For clarity purposes, when you talked about the team building one and you're finding out about the roles, whether the pioneer or the anchor, is that done together in a group? Do you take the individual DISC profiles and then create that? Or how does that get done?
The process is just, it's, you know, everyone does their assessment prior, like it would be prior to the workshop. Everyone does it. Like I said, this one's easy. It's 10, 15 minutes. I generate a report, send it out. So everyone has it. But speaking of the reports, in terms of like the management, I'm able to run reports for the managers of the teams to show things like it's called how to manage. And it will tell you a customized way to talk to that employee, which takes the guesswork out of it. It's a no-brainer. Often people come back to me and say, oh, I had a review. I pulled out the how to manage report. It was so helpful. So people really love that report. So there's that. But then when you have everybody together, so what I do is I merge them ahead of time. I build out a presentation. I build out this team audit where we look. And so the DISC profiles are what are aligned to those roles. So you'll come into the team meeting, we'll do an overview of what DISC means, we'll do a little bit of those forced empathy exercises where we sort of take a step in the other person's shoes. And then we have a look at the strengths. We have a look at this team graph. We learn what is our role on this team. Basically, how do we optimize it? How do we ensure that everybody is working in their zone of strength? Like, let's make sure that what this person is good at is something that they're able to touch. They have these touch points where they're touching something that they're really powerful in. And this is where we also talk about, hey, here's how this person ideally likes to communicate. We get a chance to sort of say our do's and don'ts. We come up with a team charter going forward with all this information. Here's what we know. Here's what we're going to do in the future. And it's usually a very, regardless of the circumstances, some people just do it for fun team building. Some people do it because there's been issues. But regardless of the circumstances, people really walk away feeling inspired and also like they belong. Like, okay, I get it. I understand where I am on this team. And I now have tools that I can communicate with so-and-so. I don't need to be worried that I've offended them or I've done whatever. Now they understand where I'm coming from. And we have such a greater chance at cohesion and success now.
And would you recommend this for what size teams? Like what, from number of people to number, like?
I've done the whole gamut. The smallest team you can do in the system is three. So I'm actually doing a team of three in a couple of weeks because you need three to make sort of that profile. I've done it from three. And then the biggest one I've done a team of 50. That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot. And that can get a bit challenging. And so sometimes what will happen is, as you know, in big companies, there's sort of almost concentric circles going on, right? So sometimes it's So I've done two workshops, let's say, for several clients. So one was like the executive or leadership team, and one was maybe more like the sales or client care coordinator team. And we've done those as separate because sometimes too, people aren't as comfortable if they feel like, oh, it's all the leaders and it's me. And then I've actually done a little bit of, I merged the results. I came back and this was fascinating. I came back and talked to the senior leadership team about the takeaways that I got from the people who were like client care and reception and all that kind of stuff. And that was really an eye-opening because as you wouldn't be surprised, the leadership team was mostly I's and D's and the other team was mostly S's and C's. And it was very, very interesting, the takeaways.
Victoria, this has been an awesome conversation.
I agree.
I'm so grateful for you being here. Is there a couple of pieces though, like that, as we wrap this up, like that you would like to impart on that, you know, things that the biggest mistakes or the biggest things that lead to success for business owners that they could utilize when it comes to team building?
It'll be a matter of like honing them down. I have a lot of things in terms of, okay, so first of all, know yourself. This is where it always starts with, know yourself. So as that person, make sure you have done, you know, if you're the leader, make sure you know your own DISC profile. Make sure you know where you're coming from and how you're likely to see a different personality style. So that's the first thing always with DISC, self-awareness. Have some sense of that. Of course, if you want a deeper dive, the EQ. And then once you know yourself, now you are going to be more skilled at reading other people and perhaps picking up on cues to maybe understand what their personality style is and apply that. Make sure that if you know somebody's different than you, try to kind of bend a little bit to their personality style. I always call it like building a bridge. Let's build a bridge to a different personality style. And let's learn to speak the same language. Because, you know, you could be saying something to me in French and I could be speaking to you in Italian. We could be as clear as we want, but we're missing the point. So let's use this as this tool.
Sorry, can I add something there? Because I think it's a really big point is, you know, if you're the leader in the organization, the onus is on you to do that. Not on your employee or your report or whatever. Well, and in just in general, actually a more generalized statement is as a human, leaders go first. And so if you want to lead, like whether they don't have to be an employee or a subordinate, they could be a peer, but it is your responsibility to go first, whether it's in your intimate relationship or at work or with your kids, it's like, somebody has to take the initiative and nothing changes until someone takes the initiative. And so that would be just my strong point to that, to emphasize it.
Thank you for saying that. I couldn't agree more. I think that is so important. And I've actually come up against this a couple times, more in the earlier years than now, but where a leader will say, yeah, I want all these profiles and I want a workshop. And then I say, okay, so you're going to do your profile and we're going to talk, oh, do I have to do mine? Like, I'm just sort of interested in seeing theirs. And I was like, you know what, how can you expect them to be vulnerable and share if you're not going to? So it starts with you and that's the example. And so the whole point of this is you have to put that out there and that's where you're going to build true connection is by leading by example. I'm glad that you pointed that out. That is absolutely key. And the leaders that are really keen to do that, or sometimes they've done it and they said, oh, I already shared it. I sent it out to everybody. A lot of Ds do that. I don't know. They all know. I'm like, okay. And it's good. And they have a sense of humor about it. I have one client, he's hilarious. He shows it to basically everybody and says, look, this is me. I think I'm pretty great, but I do have these flaws and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it just really makes people comfortable and they laugh and they can go forward. The other part in terms of hiring, what I would say, you know, you were asking me to sort of say advice or what I would recommend. It's great to have a great conversation, a great interview with somebody, but you always need sort of that objective piece, because if you're someone who's especially, let's say you're a high I, you get very influenced by, oh my gosh, we had this in common. We had a great chat. Oh my gosh, I'm going to love working with this person. You hire them on your impulse, on your feeling, and then guess what? You know, they might be a great person. They might even be a hard worker. But did you hire them for a role that aligns with their attributes? Well, probably not if you haven't gone into that. So what I would really recommend is, you know, running that. I don't recommend people just run the profiles willy-nilly. I always would say, like, you've had to have, you know, you've had one or two interviews and it would be before the final interview. Run the disc. And the nice thing about running it before a final interview is it also will provide you customized questions to that person's profile. So it really gets in there and allows you to ask questions that you wouldn't know otherwise. So that's a really cool part of it. And then just aligning it, understanding, okay, how is this going to fit? Is this going to be a good fit? And again, the next piece is the performance management, the connection. How do I now manage and motivate? Because if you apply a one-size-fits-all strategy, you can't do that in sales. You can't do that in management. You're not going to get everybody with the same approach. And this really helps you with it. I think I said it a few minutes ago, the how to manage reports are fantastic because they remind you, they, you know, people will often read them again and say, oh yeah, I think we started with this, Dwayne, about guess what? Not everyone is motivated by a bonus. Sure, most people wouldn't say no to one, but that might not be the key driving factor. So knowing that is going to help you connect with them. So, you know, I guess what I would say is don't use it as sort of like a just in terms of, oh, I'm just going to run this. I'm not going to do anything with it. There's so much more to do with it. And, you know, our biggest asset in business is the people. Like if you don't have a strong team working for you, as a team facilitator, I can tell you the number one thing that breaks down teams is not that people don't work hard, is not people's skill, is not people's education level. It is misunderstandings and miscommunications. That is the number one thing. Once you get that into an office culture, it can be toxic. It spreads like a virus. So this is not a soft skill. This is an essential skill.
There have been no words that have been more true than that, what you just said right there. I couldn't agree more when it comes to the communication and the messaging mm-hmm. between team members. And I do actually have one more question, which is in your experience with AI, or, and I'm not sure if you have how much experience you have in AI, but where do you think this allows people the competitive advantage going forward by creating teams that are working, you know, in symbiotic, you know, energies to get the outcome of the organization versus, you know, because everybody wants an answer to AI. And yes, AI is going to be critical. And if you're not using AI, you're probably not, there's a good chance you won't be in business in 10 years. I don't know if it'll be 2 years, but maybe mm-hmm. it'll be 20. I don't know. But I don't think we can miss what is in front of us, which is currently in our teams and how they work together and communicate. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what kind of plays in here.
Yeah. So I think you mentioned when you were doing my intro, something about one of my talks, which I think at the time it was like EQ over IQ. And it's funny, this has been dancing around in my head a little bit. I'm thinking, so with the assessment, it's actually technically called EI, just more people know it by EQ. But now I'm like, oh, I think now I'm going to have to say EI beats AI, right? So emotional intelligence beats artificial intelligence. That's probably going to be a new title of that talk. But it does. Like, yeah, are there things that, you know, of course we have to adapt. We can't just sit by because it is happening as we speak. But I think when you read anything, the definitive thing that keeps coming back is this is missing the human personal element. Does AI have empathy? No. So if you are a leader and you don't, then you might as well be an AI. But if you're a leader and you have awareness and you have empathy, no AI is going to be able to compete with that. What they've been deemed as soft skills in the past, they are now essential skills. And I've read so many articles alluding to that.
Yeah, it's the whole creative, the whole emotional intelligence, the EQ. And I think it's going to be just as critical, which is, and actually, I think that this is where the gap might exist. I don't know for sure, but the gap that may exist in the future is, we have a generation of children who are spending more and more time on social devices, playing video games, and not creating, emotional intelligence and EQ and, whatever phrase you want to put to it.
Yeah.
And that gap is going to widen in the future, potentially. And so that's one of the things that, is always kind of on my mind is, so anybody who's listening, like, this stuff is, get it in the hands of your kids too. This is shit. We do not talk on this podcast just about business. What happens in business, again, I've said it a million times, business is a series of relationships that we execute on a daily basis inside a workplace, but the same energy is created at home with your kids, in schools, in churches, in the community. And, this is really good stuff to be making sure that, parents are taking home to their kids and using this as another education that they're just not getting in the current education system, and they're going to need it.
I couldn't agree more. There is a movement now leaning more towards social emotional learning is what it's called. And Duane, I think you listened to a couple of episodes of my podcast. Heather and I start off with checking in with our mood meters. So how are we feeling? And that was created by Mark Brackett. And he is sort of leading a huge revolution in terms of trying to get into schools and it's called the ruler approach. But basically, it is bringing awareness to how key emotional intelligence is. And, it's still not all schools adopt it, but hopefully we're getting there. And I think that has to be the way of the future. Because, with, again, up against AI, we absolutely, it's a must.
Yeah. Science and math isn't going to get us anywhere because that'll all be done by AI. So,
yep, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a great lead in, Victoria, to how do people find you? Obviously you have the podcast, so plug that and plug where they can find you, because the information that you've presented here has been so valuable to me personally. And I just believe super valuable to people who are listening, the listeners that have businesses where they're, they've got teams, they're struggling. There's not a business that I know that at some level can improve their level of teamwork and execution and synergy between the groups. So please.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that, Duane. I appreciate it. So you can check out the podcast I have. So it's called Discovering You on wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also find me on my website, discoverwhatworks.org, and you'll see a little bit about all the different platforms that I do. Reach out. I'm happy to have a chat with you about either disc coaching, EQ coaching, speaking, team facilitation, all of it.
And actually, I will say this. We're going to be in touch with you about coming out and doing a program with our sales teams. So
awesome. I look forward to that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you being here. Fantastic information. Everyone, check out Victoria Terrio.
You got it.
Not spelled that way at all. Check her out, please. Great information. Thank you. Bless you. Appreciate your time for being on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Duane. I really appreciate it. It was a great chat.
Thanks for listening. I appreciate you being with us. If you found value in the show and know a friend or a coworker who could benefit from the conversation, please share the link via text or on social media. Remember, each share creates a ripple effect of knowledge and inspiration. We'll see you next week.
The views, information, or opinions expressed by guests during the Business of Doing Business podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Duane Kerrigan and his affiliates. Duane Kerrigan or the Business of Doing Business podcast is not responsible for and does not verify the accuracy of any of the information contained in the podcast series. The primary purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. Listeners are advised to consult with a qualified professional or specialist before making any decisions based on the content of this podcast.